Headlines.
From Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. In the right corner, I am Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan.
And in the left corner, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
It's time for the most disruptive radio show in America. It's Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. In round one today, we're going to ask, with the GOP rejecting the Obamacare repeal in the middle of the night late last night, do the Democrats own Obamacare and do they really want to? That's coming up in round one. In round two, the mooch is loose. That was easy to write, harder to say. The mooch is loose as the new White House communications director went off on a profane and obscene rant against people like Steve Bannon and Reince Priebus. Has he gone nuts? Is he a loose cannon? Or is there a method to his madness? That's up in round two. And in round three, a new feature, a weekly wrap-up of some of our signature stories here at Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan, including the Awan Brothers story, including the Ukraine election interference and collusion with the DNC, and breaking news about a new Republican proposal to get a second prosecutor to look after the Democrats. We'll be talking about all of that and more on today's Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Hey there, everybody. How you doing, Garland?
I am feeling good.
I'm soaked. It is wet. There's been several flood advisories. If you're listening on 105.5 FM here inside the Beltway, if you're in your boat driving around the Beltway,
building an ark.
Because, no, there have been. I'm getting these flash flood advisories on my phone, and it is raining a lot. So that's what's going on inside the Beltway. If you're outside the Beltway, don't forget, you can listen to us live on SputnikNews.com. You can also get us later at Spreaker, at iTunes, where we ask you to review and rate the show. Also on the Sputnik site. Also, you can watch us on Facebook Live. If you go to my Twitter, which is Stranahan at Twitter. By the way, while you're there, make sure you follow Garland Nixon at Garland Nixon. If you go to my Twitter right now, you're seeing us on Periscope, and do us a favor. If you're watching us, share it, retweet it, tell people about it, tell people you're watching us live, and share us with your friends. Again, I think we're doing something very interesting here. It's the only show I know of that brings together a Trump supporter, that would be me, and a Bernie supporter, that would be Garland.
That would be me. And you know, just so you'll know, because I have a number of friends that listen, that really enjoy listening to it on the Sputnik News Agency app. So, because it's really,
app,
if
yeah.
you're, I have some friends in California that listen, it's really a very easy thing to do. You download the Sputnik News Agency app, and in the upper left-hand corner, there's three little lines. When you touch those lines, you'll see a live button, and you hit that live button, and you'll get whatever's on the radio, which from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern time is us. So, if you're out of the, you know, somewhere out of the area, or even you're too far away from D.C. and you can't get it, just download the Sputnik News Agency app. And in the upper left-hand corner, there's three little lines. Soon as you touch them, there's the live button. And it's just as clear as if you were on the radio. I tried it myself. It's just as clear as if you were listening to it on the radio on 105.5 FM in Washington, D.C.
And I got to say, too, I think we're doing something right in the show. Me, personally, because right before we went on, the show before us, Eugene's show, By Any Means Necessary, it's a little lefty, I got to say. And Bob, who's the producer.
Bob and Eugene are great.
But Bob, who's the producer over there, was telling me he was listening to our show yesterday and he wanted to unplug my microphone. So I feel like I've succeeded in some small way when Bob wants to unplug my microphone.
It's kind of when I look at tweets and I get tweets from like your followers and they're like, oh, that Garland frustrates me. He wants to, you know, I just want to choke the guy sometimes. And I say, okay, well, my work here is done.
That's exactly right. That's what we're looking for. Okay, we got a lot to talk about today. Let's talk about this healthcare vote that happened. Mm-hmm. I was out at a restaurant with my son, Jack, who's, by the way, manning the microphone.
Would it be a vegetarian restaurant?
It would not be a vegetarian restaurant. No, I don't do that.
I could join you, you know.
Also, well, you can join
us. Braised eggplant, one of my favorites.
Yeah, look, you can just go out on the lawn. and grab some grass or something like that. But the point is, I was out late last. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm out at a restaurant with my son Jack last night, and we're looking, and I get the alert that they're about to do the vote for healthcare. It was very dramatic. The whole thing's been very dramatic. First, we had John McCain was sick, diagnosed with a serious medical ailment, surgery. He's gone. Then he comes back. And Donald Trump is so, here comes John McCain. John McCain's coming back to vote to repeal health care. I mean, Obamacare, not health care.
Right. They walk in and they're playing like the theme from Rocky.
That's right.
You know, people are cheering on the right.
Now, by the way, I sense disaster from the word go. And we'll talk about this because Garland and I have a alternative theory. I think people are being hoodwinked by a puppet show.
Yeah.
I think Republicans, pay attention. If you're a Republican, I think you're being hoodwinked by a puppet show. I'll explain in a little bit. But let's talk about this. So they do the vote. The skinny repeal. That's the idea. It's a skinny repeal. It's not a full repeal. It's just for skinny people.
It's the braised eggplant repeal on the menu.
It just gets rid of the individual mandate, which is the least popular part of this, right? So sure enough, it gets turned down, and John McCain, and again, this is that puppet show part. We'll talk about it later, so stay tuned. But John McCain cast the deciding vote, and the Republicans lose. Now, here's what I was saying to Garland this morning. So I'm going to put it on you, Garland. I will have you represent all Democrats. Great. We did not get the repeal of Obamacare the Republicans were promising. Now you Democrats own Obamacare, and you guys know that Obamacare's got massive problems. So doesn't this create a political problem for Democrats, not Republicans, that Democrats now have to basically, you break it, you bought it, the Colin Powell principle on Obamacare. Do you see some issues that the Democrats could face here?
Well, I don't. Let me tell you why. A couple of things. Number one, and that is, for some time the Democrats have acknowledged that there are problems with Obamacare, and part of it is, one of the things that they've said is, one of the big problems is because a lot of because 19 states refuse to accept Medicaid, which has created a big problem because you have people in this coverage gap. And for those of you who don't know what that is, basically you have people who aren't poor enough that, you know, they make too much money.
I'm one of those people. I'm in that donut hole.
They make too much money to get Medicaid, but they don't make enough money to qualify for subsidies because the way it was set up, there was, the states were supposed to take Medicaid. So you have that. I mean, there's a number.
I was in the wrong donut.
Okay.
Forgive me. I'm insured now.
Right.
But thanks to the Russians. I'm insured now, but previously I was making too much, even with the number of kids I have, to qualify for a subsidy.
Yep.
But not enough where I could afford anything beyond, like, I couldn't afford the insurance.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Exactly. So, and so here's the bottom line. I could get into all the various scenarios problems, but forget that, getting technical. The bottom line is this. I think the Democrats have acknowledged that two things. There are problems in Obamacare that need to be addressed, and that in order to get them addressed, and regardless of when Barack Obama was in, they would have to be bipartisan solutions, because they were things you were going to need 60 votes on if anybody was to filibuster it. So now I think the Republicans, because they've said, oh, Obamacare is terrible, all these things are going to happen. And here's where the Republicans can't escape anything. And you know, this is the bottom line. In Washington, when you get both houses and the president and the White House, it's hard to escape responsibility for anything that happens. So they've said that it was bad. Oh, it needs to be replaced. It's horrible. I think in a way they painted themselves into a corner, because now that they have both houses, that's one of the reasons they're going to get so much heat for their base.
Yeah,
when their base that they told them they were going to repeal.
Now when people's premiums go up, it's not the Republicans' fault. It's the Democrats' fault.
I don't think so. I think because one of the things the Republicans
said. Democrats love Obamacare.
But one of the things the Republicans said was, your premiums are going to go up. These terrible things are going to happen.
Well, right.
And we're going to fix it. And I think part of it, people are going to say, you got both houses in the White
House.
No,
but wait.
And you didn't fix it. And the Democrats are going to say
that,
too.
Okay, so let's just stipulate that some people's premiums are going to go up. Because that's a safe bet, right? When your premium goes up, whoever you are, Joe Citizen, By the way, Joe's a gender-neutral name, so I'm safe. Could be Joe with an E, could be Joe. I'm not even judging. But the point is...
could be Josephine, and everybody calls her Joe for
see,
short.
Now you're showing gender bias. Okay. But I was going just Joe. So Joe Citizen gets their premiums raised.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans, they can't blame the Republicans because it's Obamacare that made their premiums go up. This is what I'm saying. Be careful what you wish for. You might get it. The Democrats love Obamacare. They're obstructionists on the repeal. They didn't want to have anything to do with
God.
It. What's that?
I said, thank God they're obstructionists
okay,
on the repeal.
Now they own it.
Well, see,
it's Obamacare.
Yeah, I agree
it's
with
Democrat
you.
Care.
But you're right. The Democrats, number one, what the first thing they say is there are a lot of people that are covered. There are more people that are covered. But the second thing is this. The Democrats are going to say now, and I guarantee you the Democrats' next move is going to be this. You guys couldn't repeal it. What you were going to do weren't going to work. Now work with us to fix it. Here are the areas that need to be fixed, and we're willing to work on those areas to be fixed. Now, the question is, can the Republicans, if they can't do it within their own caucus, I don't see how politically, and particularly in the environment on Capitol Hill today, I don't see, even though there are some like real clear nonpartisan things that you can look at and say, okay, this, and this needs to be fixed. I don't think there are a lot of Republicans that will feel like, I can't work with the Democrats and then go home to my blood red district because then I'll get tossed out just for working with the Democrats, even if it was doing the right thing.
Okay, well, now
is that possible, Lee?
Let's talk about the other part of this, which makes it interesting.
Okay.
Now, I've been watching Twitter and the other social media that I'm on, and my people, Republicans.
Your peeps.
My peeps, my homeboys who are Republicans. Are all blaming John McCain, as I did at first. But then we were talking about it this morning, and here's what I think is going on. Pay attention if you're a Republican. Pay attention. I think, and I want you to go, because Garland, you're the one who sort of filled it in for me. But let me make the case.
Sure, go ahead.
I think Republicans are getting played right now. I think that John McCain, everyone saw John McCain chumming it up with the Democrats. I think this is what you were meant to think.
Right.
I think Republicans have set up John McCain as the easiest fall guy in the world because squish Republicans. In other words, if this was a secret vote, I think a lot of Republicans who are establishment Republicans would have voted against it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And here's why. Because.
But they didn't. But right. They didn't. And they're letting John McCain take the
exactly.
fall.
Exactly, because the real deal was, as I said all along, you know, I predicted it would never happen because of Medicaid expansion. And there are a lot of Republicans that can't go home and cut Medicaid because they'll lose in 2020. So they had.
But they also can't go home and say they voted
right.
against repeal.
So if you notice, and here's the giveaway, that it went by one vote. You know
yes.
what I mean? It lost by one vote. What are the odds of that? So what do they do? Here's what they say. They say, we can't let this go through, but. Who can we set up as the person that killed it that's going to hurt our party the least? Number one, John McCain is the most sympathetic figure in Congress right now because of the cancer issue. Number two, he's not running for re-election. You know what I mean? Again,
right.
the health issue and all. So you can set Murkowski, who's a safe seat. You can take Collins, who's a safe seat. And you notice they're not saying Collins killed it or Murkowski. They're
right.
saying so it's the old game of a party says we got to kill this bill and we don't want to kill it. So we'll set it up. So the final person that kills it is the one who hurts our party the least, the person we can afford to sacrifice. And then they'll and when you look at McCain, they're not really sacrificing him. But because of the brain cancer stuff, people aren't going to come down on him. But so hard. And I think that's what it's. So it's not a real.
Well, and even if they do come down on him hard,
he's not running again.
He's not running again. Right. And he's an easy foil because he's the one. But here's
and he has a history of going. You know what I mean? He has that
and
history.
And you're not
of,
saying Republicans are the only people to do that. Democrats.
No, I've seen it happen on my side of the aisle. I've been involved. I used to work with a particular congressman, not for, but particularly on the ACA. I did some help. But I saw that happen where people were like, hey, well, who's going to be the one to kill it? Well, what about this guy? Well, his seat's not safe enough. What about? So they were actually playing, you know, there's a little play going
it's theater.
On there. It's
theater.
Is theater. It's kabuki theater.
And here's the thing about it. This is my, so I agree with your analysis, except here's the where I don't agree. I don't think the sympathy for McCain thing affects Republicans. A lot of Republicans, myself included, hate John McCain. They have no respect. It's not personal. He's horrible on every issue. And therefore, he's an easy foil. Whereas I'm going to pick a couple of Republicans at random. Let's say John Thune from South Dakota. And I'll just pick, I don't think he would, Chuck Grassley.
Right. Or an Edge, whatever. Yeah.
Let's say Grassley and Thune really in their heart of hearts were never going to vote for an repeal. They've set it up so that McCain's the fall guy.
Because I can tell you, name two people right off the bat that wouldn't. Portman was never going to let that Medicaid expansion get killed with 700,000 people in Medicaid in Ohio. And I can't think of the woman, the female senator from West Virginia that constantly spoke out about it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? She was very vocal. So those are two people right off the bat that weren't going to let it happen, but they were able to vote again. You know, they were able to win and still lose.
This is my advice if you're a Republican. It's fun and easy to blame John McCain, but this did not lose because of John McCain. I'm going to say it again. This is really important for people to understand because I don't want you to get played. And that's what I'll tell you what did it for me was John McCain palling around with the Democrats on the floor in front of the TV cameras. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's obvious what's going on there. That's the setup there. That's the theater setup. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the equivalent of me going, well, Garland, I don't know whether you should have dinner tonight. You know, it's like, it's such bad acting. It's like he's doing it on TV, right? There's no real drama here. This is professional. This is the problem with politics in America. It's professional wrestling. And by the way, if you believe professional wrestling is real.
Well, you know what I would argue?
Spoiler alert.
You know, the whole time I've said that's this whole repeal and replace process that I've argued the Republicans knew they were never going to get it through because of the Medicaid expansion issue would be suicide to the party. So I've argued the whole time they were really doing a snow job on their people.
Well,
who
the proof of that,
thought that this was the reality, because I think it was a fraud.
The proof of that is that repeal passed when it was never going to become law.
Exactly.
In other words, when Obama was president, the Republicans had no problem passed. We got to repeal it because it's theater.
Yep.
They knew that Obama was never, ever in a million years going to sign that.
Yep.
Okay. So they passed it. Now that they could actually... This is why I've said before, too. This is the problem with Washington. They're not about solving problems. And by the way, it's Democrats and Republicans. If they solve your problems, there's no money
in that. And how much time was wasted on this? Months and months wasted when it was really nothing.
Yeah, and it's complete theater. Very, very irritating. Okay, coming up in round two, let's have some fun. The mooch is loose and loose lips might sink Donald Trump even further. That's coming up on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
Welcome to round two of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Also, if you're watching us on Facebook Live, make sure you share the Facebook Live video. If you're watching us on Periscope at Stranahan, make sure you retweet the Periscope video. And most importantly, go to iTunes so you can continue to get our shows in the future. Go to iTunes, look up Fault Lines, and we want you to subscribe, leave a review. Leave a 5-star rating so you could kind of be part of the Fault Lines family with Lee and I. So what's going on? The mooch is loose. Anthony Scaramucci is really having a time there in the White House. So basically he was speaking with someone the other day from the New Yorker, and he left. He kind of launched into an expletive filled tirade. And here's what I don't understand. The guy. And this is the big part I'll start with, Lee.
But let's I don't think you could have missed this story, anybody.
Crazy. I mean, he talked to
Ryan Lizza.
Yeah, and he referred to Reince Priebus as a, and I'll leave out the expletive, paranoid, schizophrenic paranoiac. He attacked Steve Bannon. He said, I'll fire everybody. So he just came out just throwing shade at everybody in the room.
He didn't just attack Steve Bannon. He suggested that Steve Bannon could do something that's, for most people, anatomically not possible, shall
exactly.
we say. I'll put it like this. It's something that were it, I'm not going to get into detail, but were it anatomically possible, most guys would never leave the house. That's all I'm saying.
So he goes on and he says, Steve's trying to build, he says, I'm not trying to build my own brand off the strength of the president. I mean, so he launched. I mean, he's hitting below the belt here with these guys.
He's lying about it, but the bottom line is I'm going to come after him in a second
He's hitting below the belt. He's launching some really nasty attacks on the president's advisors, not people that the president has fired, the president's advisors. And I said something to Lee the other day, and I believe it was just yesterday, and might have been within the last couple of days. Here's what I said. The rumors were out that Sean Spicer didn't want him in. The rumors were out that...
Spicer resigned.
But the rumors were out that Bannon didn't want him in, that Priebus, that everybody around didn't want this guy in. And he got in and he started running his mouth, and we see why. The word loose cannon would be the equivalent... To describe the mooch as a loose cannon is like describing a tidal wave as moisture. That's pretty much the equivalent. The guy, to me, if you got any sense at all, you fire this guy quickly. When you make a mistake, if you're a leader, when you make a mistake, the best thing you can do is to say, oh, I kind of blew that one, but I'm going to fix it real quick. The longer you leave this guy around, he is as they say, a cancer in the locker room. To me, seeing him there says to me, the White House has completely fallen into chaos, and it's an embarrassment to the country to see someone running around like this. They're, don't get me wrong, Lee. I'll finish up my sentence. There are people in the White House that I disagree with ideologically. That's one. Completely disagree with ideologically. Another thing is, this guy's a nutcase. This is just a nutcase. He's an embarrassment to the country. He's an embarrassment to politics.
So a couple things about this. I'll talk about the Bannon thing in a second. I'm going to get passionate about it because Mooch is just lying about this. Let me start with that one. First off, for this guy. And again, you know, for people who do what we do for a living, it's enjoyable. It's fun.
Right. Gives us something to work with, man.
This is fun. It gives us something to work with. That being said, first off, for Mooch to come out and to say what he said about Bannon's a complete lie. Pay attention, Mooch. Pay attention. Steve Bannon does not need this job. Pay attention. Steve Bannon was a millionaire before he took this job. Steve Bannon was hosting a radio show 5 days a week and running one of the biggest media companies in the country, one of the most exciting, dynamic media startups in the country, Breitbart News. For you to imply, Mooch, that Steve Bannon somehow took the job for any other reason.
To build his brand, as he
said. To build his brand is insulting. Steve Bannon took this job because he was in the Navy. Was Mooch, what was Mooch's military service?
Wall Street snake. He worked for Goldman Sachs, and then he was a hedge fund manager, which tells you what I think about him.
Right.
Which means he would probably been eligible for a job under Hillary Clinton just as quickly.
Steve Bannon worked for Goldman Sachs in a different time, in a different era. But let me point out that he was also a veteran. Steve Bannon also worked in the Pentagon. And Steve Bannon is a millionaire, as far as I know. I know what he was making at Breitbart. I know what he made beforehand. I know every time an episode of Seinfeld plays, that cha-ching sound you hear is Steve Bannon getting a little check from that because he took over the company that owned Seinfeld, right? So Steve Bannon makes money every time Seinfeld airs. So for this guy, Mooch, to insult Steve Bannon is a patriot. Steve Bannon, once again, was on the radio 5 days a week. Steve Bannon likes the microphone. But as soon as Bannon took over the job, for Trump, you didn't hear from him once. He didn't go on TV. He didn't do anything else. He's not building his brand. He cares about this country. Now, this guy, Mooch, he worked for Romney. If this guy's got a principle, I don't know what it is.
Now, he's one of the Wall Streeters. You know what their principle is. Their principle is make as much as they can off everybody else. You know, he's him and Gary Cohn's and Steve Mnuchin's and what's the guy, the Rothschild guy who's the commerce secretary. They're all the same, except this guy is a loose cannon and he is an embarrassment. Now, what do you think about what I said, Lee? Because my opinion is this. I've always felt like this.
But it really bugs me personally that this guy would insult, because I know Bannon.
And as I said,
exactly,
I don't,
right.
Look, here's something I believe in. I don't agree with Bannon on policy, right? But if I'm going to attack Bannon, I'm going to attack Bannon on policy. I'm going to say, you believe this or you agree on this policy, I disagree with that policy.
But let me disagree with you there. Let me just give you an example, because I've said this to you before, and I'm not playing you, right? I've talked to you about Steve Bannon's working class background. Let's talk about something. Steve Bannon's suggesting raising the tax rate on the wealthy.
Well, as I said, but the other part is this. But see, my point being this.
But that shocked you, right?
Yes, but here's my point. My point is, if I'm going after Steve Bannon, if I'm going after Rance Priebus, if I'm going after any of them, I'm going after him and I'm going to say, look, this is the policy that they want, and I disagree with it, and this is why. Now, I'm on the outside looking in. If I'm supposed to be inside in the part of the inner circle,
right?
Number one, here's the way I look at it. You got to, if you're playing on the team, if you're a running back and you got a problem with one of the offensive linemen, you need to go to the coach. You don't run to the press and say, yeah, the guy doesn't block anybody. He's a drunk. He never comes to practice, blah, blah. You go to the coach.
And
this guy's going
out.
And
you don't run to the enemy press. Ryan Lizza, this is what bothers me. It's not even that he's nuts. You said he's nuts.
Yeah, I think he's nuts.
I don't think
or
he's
something,
nuts.
Or just a big jerk.
He's stupid, too. Because here's the thing. If you're the communications director and you can't figure out that Ryan Lizza. Now, here's the thing. The first thing that Scaramucci did is he went on Breitbart's radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And he started cozying up to Matt Boyle over there, who's he's an awful host. And he's a bad journalist, right? And anybody who knows me and my history knows that I've been pretty vocal about saying that about Matt. Not a fan. So he's sucking up to Matt Boyle on Breitbart. Now, why do you do that? But I will say this. If he had said the stuff he'd said to Matt Boyle never would have gone public with it. Because Matt is on the side of the administration. Does that make sense?
It would have been the equivalent of Valerie Jarrett calling Breitbart or the Gateway Pundit,
right,
and ripping everybody, right, in the Bush and in the Obama administration. It would have been, everybody would have looked at her and said, you're out of your mind, and saying, you know, calling somebody over at Breitbart or the Gateway Pundit or the Daily Caller and saying, now, whatever you do, don't leak any of this. But you know what I mean?
By the way, Valerie Jarrett, if you're listening, you can call me. You can trust me.
Yeah,
Valerie,
exactly.
Jarrett, no, seriously, just call me. Tell me all the secrets. I would never say anything. So feel free to call me.
Yeah, but now let me go one further. So let me go after Trump on this. This is why I said that my opinion is, if you are in charge and you make an error, you got to cut them quick. You got to cut your losses quick. I think it reflects on, number one, it reflects on Donald Trump's leadership ability. You are the president of the United States, and you just brought someone in that's making a fool of not just of himself, but he's doing what I call like a cardinal sin. And what Lee and I discussed this earlier, and that is, you got a boss. You don't upstage the boss. You don't come in.
Well,
and now everybody's talking about you. You're the big guy. You're the big mouth. You're not the boss. I think that Donald Trump, if he doesn't very quickly say, this was an error, this guy's gone, and say something to the press, unfortunately it didn't work out, then people are going to look at Donald Trump and say, your skills or leadership are null and void. You haven't how long are you going to leave this guy in here to rot your administration to pieces? You got enough problems there already, and you got leakers everywhere, and now you're going to bring a crazy guy to tear it to pieces from the inside. Donald Trump's administrative skills, for all that people have said, well, he was a great businessman, he was a great leader. If he allows this guy to sit in there, every day this guy sits in, he looks like a schmuck.
Well, I'll tell you.
And of course, you know, I already thought he was a schmuck. So, but this schmuckier.
Well, here's the thing. As you say, there's a rule, which is don't upstage the boss. But that rule has a little asterisk next to it. And if you check the asterisk and you go down to the footnotes, it says, especially if the boss is Donald Trump. Donald Trump is very well known for, in fact, one of the ways.
I think you could change that to the president. Because all presidents are big ego people. You know what I mean?
That's true.
But Trump is
that's
bigger
true,
than most.
But let's look at what happened with – here's my point. Here's what happened with Trump and Bannon. Bannon did nothing to call attention to himself. He gave one speech since he took over at CPAC with Reince Priebus. Okay? That's it.
I don't think Reince Priebus has said three words, has he? I think he's hiding under the covers. I haven't heard anything. Well, has he said anything?
Reince Priebus may have said stuff, but if he did, it was probably leaking it to reporters. Not that I know that for sure. It's just
a few things that he said
just
been,
a wild
like, to the New
guess.
York Times, the Washington Post.
So he may have been saying a lot. I don't know this for sure.
Just throwing that out there.
But I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah, no, but here's the point. The way they drove a wedge. Remember the part we tell, you know, when we first started doing the show, Steve Bannon was supposed to be getting fired any day, right? And the reason why is Trump was expressing public dissatisfaction that Bannon was getting headlines. And that wasn't because Bannon wanted headlines. It's because I think they were trying to drive a wedge. The establishment media, who hates Donald Trump, wanted to take Bannon out at the knees. And the way they could do it is make it look like he was trying to upstage the boss. Now, Mooch, by doing stuff like calling this reporter, and once again, you know, we talked in the first segment about how John McCain palling around the Democrats seems like theater to me.
Mm-hmm.
I got to say, there's a joke. There's a joke about a bear. And I can't tell the whole joke because it's very dirty. But it ends with, I'll try to do the cleanest version I can. I'm not even going to do the whole joke, but here's what it is. A bear goes into the woods. A hunter shoots at him. The bear is upset that the hunter tried to shoot him, and the bear, let's say, makes love to the hunter. Let's just put it that way. This happens several times. I'm telling the joke horribly, but I'm getting to the point. This happens several times. He tries to shoot at the bear, misses. The bear comes over and once again makes sweet love to the hunter. Eventually, the third time the hunter tries this, the bear whistles. Eight bears walk out of the woods, and the bear says to the hunter, "You didn't really come here to hunt, did you?" Now, the point is, if you call the enemy, if you call Ryan Lizza, a reporter who hates Trump, and you should a snake in the grass who you can't trust, part of the opposition, you didn't really come here to hunt, did you? In other words, your goal, it seems like your goal was to get caught. You know,
good point.
I'll tell you
almost
who else
like
it reminds
you wanted
me of.
Almost like you wanted it out there.
Yes.
But here's the other
thing.
If you're
Anthony Weiner and it's your fourth time sexting with people and you're using your real name, right, and your name's Carlos.
Well, here's the other part,
Carlos
too.
Danger.
And I'm going to put it like this, because for those of you who don't know, I was in law enforcement. I retired. I was a major. And I'm not saying this is gender specific, because we had, you know, female lieutenant colonels, et cetera. Here's what I'm saying. As a member of the command staff, right, it was a very macho, the command staff was a very macho, you know, atmosphere. There was a lot of big egos there. There were people, and I'm not saying, you know, that's gender specific, because we had female captains, lieutenant colonels, et cetera, but it was a tough atmosphere. It was a who's in charge. It was don't disrespect me. It was, you know, don't make me look bad in front of the people under me kind of atmosphere. You know, that kind of atmosphere, right? And my point being this, in the White House, they're people who have a lot of power. They're people who are, you know, they say go here and go there and people go here and go there and it's a very macho, tough guy who's in charge atmosphere. And for Scaramucci to come in to this kind of atmosphere with people who are like strutting around and preening, look at me, I'm in power. I'm an advisor to the president, blah, blah, blah. People will be writing books and making statues about me for years to come. People with those kind of attitudes and egos, all of them, because you wouldn't be there if you didn't have that kind of an attitude and ego. So I'm not saying it in a pejorative or negative sense. My point being, for Scaramucci to come in to this tough guy atmosphere and to basically just walk around kicking, you know, metaphorically speaking, kicking people in the groin, he's calling Priebus a paranoid schizophrenic, to me, is just utter madness. It's a guy who's accustomed to being a hedge fund manager, and he was in charge, and everybody did what he said, and he comes in here like these are all his employees, and he's like, I'll fire people. Well, last time I checked, you're not in charge, dude. And as I said, if Trump doesn't can this guy and he leaves this guy to continue on in this madness, then I'm going to look at Trump and say, you know, I didn't have a lot of respect for you as a leader. Now I have none. You got to go.
Now, let me make the counter argument.
All righty.
Let me make the argument that some I'm seeing.
This
some
I got to hear.
I'm seeing some people make this argument. While the press is talking about this, they're not talking about Trump-Russia, for instance, right? So in other words, this is a distraction, 2 months of media distraction. Now, I'm seeing some people make that argument. Some people, I call it the Pee Wee Herman defense, which is, I meant to do that, right? Like, in other words, you trip and you fall,
exactly,
and you're like, I meant to do
yeah.
that, right? In other words, like, it's the three-dimensional chess argument some people make. Some Trump supporters, he literally can't do anything wrong.
Right.
Everything he does, they're deifying. I'm a Christian. I'm not a Trumpist, right? And in other words, I'm a Trump supporter insofar as he is a populist nationalist, and I'm not insofar as he's not. But he's just a guy. He's just a guy. And I don't, a lot of people like to be negative. He's a stupid guy. He's about, no. He's a smart guy. He's made a lot of money. He's been very successful. And he's successfully played the media a number of times, I think. That being said, boy, that's a real tough argument to make here. That's a real tough argument to make. You'd have to believe that he knew for a fact that Ryan Lizza would report this. And the fact is, a lot of reporters would not have reported it. Now, here's the other question. You got to wonder, now Mooch has already been up on Twitter and said, oops, I shouldn't have trusted a reporter. I won't do that again. Well, no, maybe it's you.
Yeah, that's a weak argument.
Maybe it's not the reporter. Maybe it's you.
If you and I, Lee, know basically which reporters, depending on which side of the ideological aisle you're on, you know who you can and can't call. And even then, if you call somebody that agrees with you ideologically, here's the thing, they're still a journalist.
Well, but I've said,
which means that person may simply say, hey, I agree with this guy, but I can make my name big by bringing him down. You can't even take that chance.
I'm personally slutty. I talk to everybody, but I got to say, you watch what you say with everybody. Maybe you shouldn't have said that stuff in the first place. Anyway, we'll have our signature stories on the weekly wrap-up coming up next on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
We are back, the third and final round of the day and of the week here on Fault Lines. And like we say, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, let people know what we're doing. It's the most disruptive radio show in America, making you smarter and giving you information on stories that you frankly are not getting anyplace else. And you're hearing it from a Bernie supporter and a Trump supporter, from people. You know, we say the divided states of America, and the show's called Fault Lines. But the thing I think we actually show is that people who are supposed to be on different sides of the ideological line can actually agree on a lot of stuff. Both of us are against corruption and the establishment. And
the other thing I think we show is this, and that, because Lee and I are good friends, and that is, there is a false premise out there that if somebody disagrees with you, they have to be the enemy and you have to dislike them and they're evil. You know, I'm a Giants fan and you're a, you know, an Eagles fan, and we've got to hate each other. You know what I mean? Whereas what we demonstrate is we disagree on a lot of things. We agree with, we agree on some things, and we're still friends, you know,
that's also
important too.
And the whole thing, until we talk about climate change, and then all bets are off. Okay. So, let's talk about, this is a new segment that we're doing. It's called the Weekly Wrap-Up. And it's just that, well, here's what we're going to try to do. Every Friday, last segment of the week, we're going to talk about some of what I'm calling our signature stories. This is based on the idea that, you know, chefs, like, if you watch any of those cooking shows? Do you cook at all?
Yes, I watch some of them.
Okay, so you know how they talk about, like, signature dishes? Right, like chicken waffles is the signature dish for the chef or whatever, right? So there's signature stories too, right? And this show, if you've been listening to us for a few weeks, a few months, if you're new, like you would be if you're listening on 105.5 FM inside the Beltway, then you'll hear that there are stories that we cover that frankly the mainstream media is not covering, or worse, is burying, or worse, is lying about.
And that's one of the things that we focus on doing.
That's right.
And the stories that they
the
are
opposite.
Covering.
We don't focus on lying about.
No, we focus on covering stories that other people aren't covering, and we get out ahead of the news a lot. And the other part of it is on covering them from angles that the mainstream media is not covering from. You know, as I always say, the AP, the Associated Press, I call it the approved premise. They've got an approved premise and everybody runs by that. Lee and I don't run by the approved premise. We come up with our own premises.
That's right. And we tell people, with the people being, you know, you listening, we tell people, check the information out for yourself. Don't do it. I saw someone, I love this. Someone was on Twitter and called me Comrade Stranahan. Oh, I get it. Right. Because I'm talking into a microphone at a studio at Sputnik, I'm Comrade because I'm a communist, which means you don't listen to the show because you're dumb.
Yeah, something might be said that may be disruptive.
That's
which
what
is
it
kind
is.
Of the point here.
That's what it is. So it's like a Comrade Strand. It's like clever. Yeah, that's good. It's the first time I've ever heard anything like that. Let's talk about a few of the stories, but let's bring this in with news. So we talked about the Awan Brothers story earlier in the week. We'll talk a little bit more about that. We talked about the Ukrainian interference in the election. This is another big story we've covered that the media, both of these stories, the media completely ignores. But here's what's interesting. Breaking news. Well, breaking news, I guess, yesterday.
Yeah.
But breaking news still. The Republicans are calling for a second special prosecutor. And I understand why they want a second one. Because they don't want Mueller, who might be, I'm not even going to argue it, might be okay to investigate one thing, but he's clearly got ties to Comey and ties to Hillary and other stuff.
And he's got his hands full.
And he's, sure, let's go with that.
Yeah.
But they're calling for a second special prosecutor to look into what I will call Democrat corruption, although part of it is, and God bless the Republicans for doing this, they want this special prosecutor to look into what the Democrat establishment, the DNC, did to Bernie Sanders. That jumped out at
me. Here's what's interesting about it. The House Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte and like 14 or 22, I think, Republicans, somewhere around two dozen Republicans, they sent a letter to Jeff Sessions and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, and they made a list of 14 things that they wanted a special counsel to look into. Yeah, here's what's interesting about that. Rod Rosenstein's name is on there. That Lee and I reported a few days ago that the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is Grassley, right? So now we've got the House Judiciary Committee, which tells us that this is a coordinated effort, right? The chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee a few days ago sent a letter to Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein asking them to look into the Ukrainian interference in the election by the DNC, right? So now a few days later, the House Judiciary Committee sends one in and they've got 14 requests, which we'll get into some of them. But one of the things says, let me find it. It mentions the Ukraine.
It mentions the Ukraine. Yeah, it mentions Ukraine twice, actually.
Yes.
In these 14 points, they mention Ukraine twice. And by the way, I got to just...
Oh, there we go. Connections between Clinton officials and foreign entities, including Russia and the Ukraine.
Well, because we never talk about the Clinton connections to Russia. The media is so focused on trying to find
the other part.
A connection.
The FBI's reliance on controversial firm Fusion GPS, which was involved in the questionable anti-Trump dossier. Again, that stuff comes back to the DNC and their actions, which included some work with the Ukraine. So there, you know what a part of it is? It's like this. It seems that they decided the DNC, basically, for those of you who don't know it, you know, the people over at the Center for American Progress, it has been reported that they're the ones that came up with the idea of Russiagate, that blaming it all on Russiagate.
Right.
And it appears to me that the GOP decided, okay, we're going to launch a counterattack. The issue being, Russiagate has been all allegations. And some of this stuff is already proven. The Ukrainian interference is already proven. That's not allegation.
Well, it's agreed to. And I think I'm going to recommend this, too, because I was saying this earlier. But before I get into the details in the Ukraine thing, let me say something. This is such a big deal. This is such a huge deal that people are finally saying, let's investigate the Democrat side. That I got to tell you, if you're listening, I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. I don't care if you're a Trump supporter or a Bernie supporter. You should support this. Well, you which means you need to call your congressman or your senator and say to them, if you support this, I want you to do this, because otherwise they need to know this is not going to get covered by CNN. It's not going to get covered. They're going to mention it.
It's on Fox. Fox is the only one reporting it earlier today. Here is the biggie to me, being a left person guy, being a guy who's very bitter from the primaries and the corruption in the primaries. One of the things that the GOP is asking for a special counsel to investigate, listen to this, revelations in hacked Democratic National Committee emails about inappropriate coordination between the DNC and Clinton campaign against Bernie Sanders' Democratic primary campaign. There are a lot of burners who are going to see that and say, you know what? We don't agree with the Republicans on policies. However, these people, we feel that we were robbed by us. We feel that, you know, the Bernie people have all along said, you guys, you know, you want all this Russia investigation. When is somebody? The Bernie people have said, we will want Mueller. If you're doing this investigation into corruption, Mueller, make sure you investigate the DNC. There's a lot of Bernie people that are going to be on board this, that are so furious at the DNC and at the Hillary people. And they look at this, and most of these requests are made about the DNC and the Hillary people in the primaries in the general election. And trust me, a lot of Bernie people are going to say, hey, we're on board. We want to see this happen. Where do I sign up for that?
Well, and there's two areas that there's hypocrisy there. Not the people you're talking about. There's two people, the Democrats and the media are completely hypocritical. By the Democrats, I mean the Democrat establishment.
I don't mean
the grassroots people. There's two areas. Number one, let's just take the Russia issue. Let's just take it for a second, okay? If you're looking at it fairly, you're going to have to ask two questions. Number one, if I'm looking at Trump Russia, should I also be looking at Clinton Russia? The media never did that. For instance, we know for a fact that Bill Clinton took $500,000 to do a speech in Russia.
Moscow.
In Moscow, right? We've heard about General Flynn taking money. I think he took 40 grand.
Yeah.
So Bill Clinton's rates better, apparently. That's the issue. But here's the point. If you're going to talk about Flynn, then you should talk about Clinton. The second issue is, if you're going to ascribe something to one country, if you're going to say Russian hacking, we'll talk about Chinese hacking, or talk about Ukrainian hacking. Ukraine has also done hacking as well. This is my point. What they've done is they picked a target. Russia. Russia's the target. And now they just hit on that target. This is Alinsky. I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but this is Alinsky tactic, which is you freeze a target and then you pick on that target.
But it's what lawyers do, too. You know what I mean? If you're a lawyer, you know, if somebody's going after something, it's what any lawyer does. If you got five things to go after somebody or five things that you can defend and you find one that no one can possibly get you on, that's the one you focus on. But the bad thing about it is this. You know what I said earlier? To me, what they're doing is like this. It's like the old adage of somebody digging a grave for somebody else and they fall in their own grave. Because they're, oh, we've got to deal with this foreign hacking, election interference. One of the things that they're asking, keep in mind, the Republicans are asking for special counsel to look into is this. The disclosures in WikiLeaks released emails regarding the Clinton Foundation, and according to the letter, it's potentially unlawful international dealings. Let me tell you, you're not hearing that anymore anywhere. You're hearing on this show. But if the special counsel starts looking at the Clinton Foundation and the money coming in
right
from the Saudis, from Kazakhstan, from Moscow, from all over the place, for
right
these billionaires around the world and from these governments around the world.
Can I give you another name?
For people,
Viktor Pinchuk.
Right.
Viktor Pinchuk was the biggest funder. Who is he? He's a Ukrainian billionaire. He's a Ukrainian billionaire who is tied in to all this stuff. He's a close friend with Bill Clinton. He was one of the biggest founder in 2015 to one of these Clintons. I can't remember if it's Clinton Global Initiative or the Clinton Foundation, but they're all kind of, they muddy up at some point. But the single biggest donor. And Viktor Pinchuk is connected to this DNC interference because the guy who introduced the secret ledger on Paul Manafort used to work for Viktor Pinchuk's TV station, a guy named Leschenko, who we've talked about before. But the point is, you've probably never heard the name Viktor Pinchuk before. Yeah, right? And just the fact that this Hungarian, Ukrainian, forgive me, I was confusing with George Soros, the Hungarian billionaire. This is the Ukrainian billionaire who's the biggest donor. Now, let's talk about another story here. But I'm just going to reiterate the fact that some Republicans, and by the way, I would love to see someone like Tulsi Gabbard be really brave, because I think she could do it. I think she's the only one I can think of among the Democrats who could say, you know what, yeah, let's investigate this. But I think the pressure would be
It's going to be interesting to me, because I know the grassroots Bernie people, progressives that I know online, are going to be screaming and pumping their fists in the air saying, yes, we want a special counsel to investigate the Clintons. The Clintons the DNC and the Clintons have so infuriated the base. Let's not forget that right now the DNC is being sued by the Bernie people for fraud. So do you think they wouldn't jump up and down and say, where do I sign up for that?
I got to say, by the way, we have breaking news right now. The second segment, we talked about how the mooch is loose.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he may be looser than we thought. The breaking news right now is that his wife has just filed for divorce. They've been separated 3 years, but she just finally...
She read that. She's like, oh, Maddie.
That's right. So that's the breaking news that's coming. That's from the Daily Mail.
Well, apparently she's got better administrative skills than Trump. Because if he don't divorce himself from her, from the mooch, then he don't know what he's doing. But let's not forget, we only got a few minutes left. Imran Awan, we don't want to miss that story that we've been talking about.
No, and that's another story we talked about. We had a great segment on it yesterday, if you haven't seen it. By the way, I'm just going to say this, too. I'm putting up a lot of supplemental materials at my site, populist.tv. If you go to populist.tv, we're working on a big resource page about the Ukraine story and about the Awan brothers story.
Right.
I don't think it's quite published yet. But really, Garland, what I'm trying to do is put all the research material so people can look at it themselves and make up their own mind over
the mainstream media. There's been what we call radio silence on the Imran Awan story. And this guy was Debbie Wasserman Schultz, IT specialist when she was, and here's why it's critical, because at the time that she was, he was her, a paid IT specialist at the time that she was the chair of the DNC.
Right.
Because in the WikiLeaks email, someone said in an email, Imran has her username and password. And that's critical because, and they are accused of multiple IT violations and accessing information that they shouldn't on the Democratic server. So here's the bottom line. It's extremely pertinent to the entire hacking discussion.
Well,
because if this guy had her email, he could have easily gotten in and downloaded everything.
Well, let me say something else, too. The Democrats were warned, according to the FBI, months before this happened. And the Democrats, let's point this out, refused to give the FBI their servers to look at, despite the FBI. And I've seen people justify this online and go, well, gee, why should they give them? Well, here's a reason. The FBI asked you for them.
You claim they were hacked by the
Russians.
You
claim they were hacked, and the FBI says, we'd like to look at the servers.
And you got to add this.
The right answer is, okay, here you go.
And you got to add this, and that is, that there were a number of laptops and hard drives that were taken by the Capitol Police who were investigating
on the
Awan
story.
Brothers.
These are two separate things.
Right.
But
they were during the Awan brothers investigation, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, IT specialist, the Capitol Police had taken a number of the hard drives and taken some of the laptops. And she was struggling in the midst of the investigation saying, give them back. And the Capitol Police were saying, we can't because they're evidence in an investigation. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz was saying, give them back or there will be consequences. And you got to ask yourself, what do you got to hide?
Well, that's right. And it's the same thing with the CrowdStrike thing. And again, these are separate issues. The thing I think we can say for sure without any conjecture is the Democrats aren't real good at cybersecurity. That's, I think, the thing we can say safely. Also,
it appears that the DNC and the DWS people, I don't know for sure. Am I wrong in saying it appears that they got something to hide?
Well, it does. And let's point this out, too. When the FBI said to the DNC, we'd like to look at your servers, and the DNC said, no, you can't look at them, because that's what happened.
Right.
What happened was they're not cooperating with the police. Now, the second thing that happened there is that Then they lied about it. The DNC was asked, did the FBI ask for it? And they lied about it. So the Comey had to say under oath three times, this is public record, twice in front of the Senate, once in front of the House, yes, we asked the DNC. The third thing, though, that I'm going to mention here, because we talked about Sanders, the only people to examine the DNC servers are a company employed by the DNC called CrowdStrike. And what people need to remember is that CrowdStrike was originally hired by the DNC to prove that someone else had broken into their system. Do you remember who that is, Garland?
Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders had to file a lawsuit to get back into the system.
That's right. Well, but I just want to reiterate that.
Yeah, and
the DNC
get his own files.
Accused, remember this, the DNC accused Bernie Sanders before they accused Russia. They accused Bernie Sanders of hacking in. They hired this company, CrowdStrike, who looked at the stuff and said, gee, yeah, Bernie Sanders hacked.
And so after all of these IT, let's call them mishaps, we find out here in the last couple of days that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and look up this, don't believe me, look it up for yourself. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, IT specialist, Imran Awan, is nabbed by the FBI at Dulles Airport, where he wired almost $300,000 to Pakistan, and he was trying to skip the country. And we also find out that even though he was under investigation, Debbie Wasserman Schultz still kept him on her payroll and paid him all the way up until Monday night when they arrested him. And you have to ask, the other Democrats that were using this guy for IT, when they found out he was under investigation for IT violations, they let him go. Debbie Wasserman Schultz continued to pay him all the way up until the time that the FBI nabbed the guy. And you got to ask yourself, what's up with that?
And I've said it before, and if it were the Republicans doing it, it would be front page news every single day on the New York Times and the Washington Post. It would be all over CNN. It would be all over NBC.
Well, I'm a Bernie guy. I want to haunt Debbie Wasserman Schultz like the ghost of Marley.
That's right. But they ignore the story. We're bringing it to you here. Someone on Twitter said, why do you work here? I said, journalistic freedom. We have the freedom, Garland and I, to bring you the truth. And that's what we do every day. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell everybody. Listen, Monday through Friday, to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.